A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Nakari, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, on Yidinji country. That's BBM Bumrabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation, thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, taking the time to ensure a better future for our kids, that was urged there by the urge to the ministers. Meeting discussed the draft framework to develop the best possible plan for our First Nation kids, especially in and out of home care. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Snake CEO Catherine Little on the line. Catherine, very good morning. How are you?
I'm pretty good, actually. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Melbourne, so that's something to be grateful for.
Yeah, fantastic. Beautiful day. Still in lockdown, but a beautiful day. Sun shining, yes?
That's right. There's sun coming through the window, so that makes me a lucky person.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you, sister. Thank you for coming to the program. A very important conversation. We're talking about our First Nation children, the future, our future as black people or Australia, for that matter. We're talking about urging ministers to discuss the draft framework to develop the best possible plan in regarding the overrepresentation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children in and out of home care. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It's something we've been working on. The national. Successor plan for protecting Australia children for quite some time now, and it is certainly getting to the end of those negotiations, and we're really pleased that we have been able to prompt ministers who agreed. You know, it's we need to stay at the table and take the time to get this right.
Well, exactly.
That's right. And the reason it's so important is when you look at this plan, 41% of the children in out-of-home care are actually Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, and the current modelling shows that that number is going to will double by 2030.
Yeah.
So what we need is a very, very different plan, and what we have for the first time ever is a new framework under the Closing the Gap Agreement that enables us to negotiate different, but it hasn't been done before. So this is tough work, you know. This
yes.
is shoulder at the wheel and saying, how do we mend these compromises, and how do we ensure that in negotiating, it doesn't become a compromise, but rather the best possible plan.
Well, exactly. The so-called plan that they've had over the years, well, it hasn't worked. And so we need, how you say, plan B. We need a better plan in regard to moving into the future, yes?
Oh, absolutely. And those plans, you know, they need to represent what the mob on the ground have identified. But they also need to be transformative. You know, we need to have the levers in place that say, start looking at early intervention, start looking at what self-determination looks like, start looking at what delegated authorities might look like, start looking at what we need to ensure accountability and governance as we roll this national framework out. Because historically, and we've found this right across the country, mob on the ground have said, historically what we know is the only people that are held accountable to the outcomes in out-of-home care are parents.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, there's a whole system that needs to be addressed before we start just looking at parents. We need to be supporting parents better and families better to be able to get the best possible outcomes.
Well, we're talking about protecting our children, yes, but the other end of the scale, the other side of the coin, is the parents, as you said, looking after them, helping them through their dramas and what's happening in their life, you know, and helping them see light at the end of the tunnel and guide and support them in that space.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it, you know, all of these new plans, again, are looking at a more systemic response. And that's an understanding that these things don't happen, problems don't happen in isolation. There are multiple drivers that need to be addressed. And, you know, these are big words, but basically it means we do need to be looking at what is getting in the way. You know, what do our families need to be able to give our kids all the options in the world?
And whether you agree or not, but we've had elders say that out-of-home care is like the 21st century stolen generation. Some of elders have spoke.
Yeah, look, I understand where that comes from. And as I said before, the trajectory is pretty horrific. You know, if we're currently looking at 41% of our kids in out-of-home, in the current child protection system are ours, going to double without...
And we don't want those numbers, do we?
Transformation. No, we don't. Because what we know is children within that system are often disconnected from families, they're disconnected from communities, they're disconnected from culture, and we know there are long-term impacts on your well-being and your life outcomes.
Well, recipe for failure, if you look at it, for their future.
Absolutely. And look, the stats relating to things like juvenile detention are really closely linked to child protection as well. So there are, you know, we need to get in and we need to find a way to do it differently, and we need to be ensuring that our mob on the ground have the ability to lead these decisions and lead these discussions, develop our own workforce, develop our own specialists in this space, and truly be able to respond to what is going on.
Well, the government's got to be very serious about the national agreement on closing the gap. I mean, well done has been well said. We need action, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things we know in negotiating plans like this under the new framework is, it hasn't been done before.
Sure.
It hasn't been done before. There is no rule book for this. So the plan gives us a set of rules that we can lean back on. And what our leadership group has been identifying in all of this is we've seen plans go wrong before. We've seen aspirations. We've seen lots of language that says the right thing. But what we know is they don't always deliver to the best of ambitions. So what we're keen to see is that the state that all governments are coming to the table and looking at what needs to work differently in order to ensure that the grand ambitions actually have a clear framework for delivery and implementation and governance and accountability.
Exactly. And, of course, First Nation people have got to be at the table. We have the answers to the problem, so to speak. We have the solution, but it's got to come from the inside out, doesn't it?
Oh, look, it absolutely is. You can't transform a system without the people within the system being able to feed back into it. You know, that one's just common logic.
Exactly, if you look at it that way. They call it common sense, you know, but yeah. Too deadly, my sister. Thank you very much for sharing a very important space, and I hope the government's listening. And in regard, if they're serious about the national agreement on closing the gap, then they need to have an open ears, open mind, and are ready for the conversation, sister.
Absolutely. It's a brave conversation, so we're glad they're still at the table.
Good, Catherine. Nice talking with you. All the best, my sis. Stay safe, and we'll yarn soon.
No worries. See you.
Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there. Sister Catherine Little, CEO of Snake, and talking about how she's urging the ministers to discuss the draft framework to develop the best possible plan to reverse the overrepresentation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait children in and out of home care. So very important space, and it's very sad, but numbers are looking towards 2030, about doubling. There's 41% of our children in and out of home care at the moment, and the modelling shows the numbers will double. So we don't want those numbers, and we need to talk, discuss, and act on it right now, early as possible. Have your say, yarn up strong, add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, the deadly number, 1-800-422-416.
get on your mouth, it's me, Bush Takabanji, and you're listening to the National Talk Black program, Makaran.
National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
A very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your Dingy Country. That's BBM Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your Sabre calls from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yes, we are in lockdown in regard to COVID-19, in regard to lockdown of our world upside down in regard to jobs, finance, education, all the above. But the other finding is triple load in lockdowns takes toll on women and gender equality. We're going to catch up a yarn now with lead author, Dr. Fiona McDonald, and talk about this space. A very good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Trevor. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for coming to the program. So I believe you're based down there in Melbourne, thinking of you guys.
Yeah, we're stuck at home and the weather's not as nice as yours.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So when the borders open up, come up and visit us here in far north Queensland. Look, talk about this very important space here. Triple load and lockdowns takes toll on women and gender equality. Thanks to COVID-19, a woman's job is never done. And so there's more pressure on the woman doing the job, and your findings have found this. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We did a small study where we interviewed women who were living with male partners and where they're both locked down at home with primary school children. Mm. And what we found was that women just had to be flexible for everybody. They had to do the schooling. They had to do all the extra housework. I think men did more, but women really carried the burden of that.
So men are picking up their game, but they can do a bit more. There's room for extra hands at the table, so to speak.
Yeah, and the men were doing more.
Yes.
But it's just such a massive load. And what it kind of exposes is if you have women doing most of the child care work from when kids are really little, then when something, you know, in this situation, women are the ones left holding all of that. So men might do a bit more of the cooking or a bit more of the cleaning around the house, but women were trying to keep their jobs and help their kids with schooling and didn't feel like they were doing either of those very well. And while we found that men, while they picked up their game a bit, but their employers weren't necessarily used to allowing them any flexibility. So they were kind of expecting them to be at work, on the same terms as they always were.
So I suppose that the other thing that we need to have on the table is regarding the men who are at work and regarding the company or the office, the boss needs to have flexibility for the men to do their bit at home as well?
Yeah, so the families that we were talking to were mainly all working at home.
Okay.
And while women's employers were used to having, used to them being flexible if they had sick kids, or whatever.
Sure.
Men's employers tend to just expect them to be there at the desk.
Yeah. If they're at the desk, then they're not with the children or helping the other half.
Yeah. So women were getting up really, really early trying to do their work before the kids got up, and then they were having to stop for lunch, and get everybody else lunch. And whereas men were kind of just working their normal days. And so the problem with this is I think that in the long term, where we've had really long lockdowns, I think women are kind of, their precarious employment becomes more precarious. They're not taking on extra responsibilities. They're not going for promotions. They're not.
So it impacts them on their work and their career opportunities, so to speak.
Yeah. So it just kind of entrenches the gender pay gap and entrenches the economic inequality. And it kind of exposes that idea that we have where women will do, we have a 1.5 household, with couple families anyway, just that, the man works full time and the mum works part time, how it just disadvantages women because they have to be there to be flexible for everything.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down. With the findings and with this survey you've done, Dr. Fiona, this information, where does it go, and what can we do with this information to help and support our women and gender equality?
Well, I think what we need, one of the things that we're doing is I'm part of a work and family policy roundtable that lobbies lobbies governments around things that improve gender equality for women, and one of them is access to affordable and affordable and accessible childcare.
Okay.
It's a really important thing. If women can confidently get some childcare for children, it gives them a better opportunity to participate in economically, to participate in work, and so we will be talking to people about that. And the other one I think we all need to do is to help men challenge their workplaces and their employers to be a bit more flexible and to see men as fathers.
Sure, yes, yes. Because that could be daunting for some men in regard to the protection of the job or the pay packet, so to speak.
Yeah, but it gives we needed to even it out a bit.
Yes.
So men kind of feel that they need to be in these long hours, full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Because women are in, lower paid, shorter hours jobs. We need to balance it out a bit.
Exactly.
Give men a bit more flexibility and let them do a bit of part-time work. And then women can take on more work and we've got a much more balanced situation and a much more balanced situation for the kids.
Look, a very important conversation, a very important survey as such to help with the movement ahead and, like I said, supporting our women and gender equality. Thank you very much for sharing, Dr. Fiona, and all the best to your family, your team.
Okay.
Stay safe and we'll yarn soon, okay?
Yeah, Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, Trevor. Good to speak to you.
All the best to you. Bye.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Adela Yan there. Dr. Fiona McDonald, she's lead author of the survey they did in regarding women in the workforce and gender equality, but also dealing with the world we live in regarding COVID-19 lockdowns and how it disproportionates and impacts on women in the work and career opportunities and the work they're doing at home with the family, which is never ever done. A woman's job is never ever done. Brothers out there, fantastic. Putting your hands up and doing your bit, but we can do a bit more. So that's what it's all about. But having that conversation also, our brothers out there talk with their bosses or their work colleagues, their seniors in regard to support for our women at home and our children at home. There it is. Have your say. Yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here. National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416.
What's the colour of a flag? Red, black and yellow. What's the colour of our flag? Red, black and yellow.
A very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can have your saber calls on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. ACCAP 21 is what it's called, and that's the Army Aboriginal Community Assistance Program. And happening in Pompera at the moment, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Major Greg Stannard, is the officer in charge, and also he's got with him Lance Corporal Anthony Curtis, plan operator there, and also Private Melanie Norris, who's an Army medical technician. On the line, very good morning to you three. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor.
Hi.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on. Well, great, thanks.
No, great, fantastic. Thank you for coming to the program. Daily program, what you guys are doing, Army Aboriginal Community Assistance Program. I'll start with you, Major Greg. What do you guys do? How does it work? And how long you been doing it? And great to have First Nation soldiers at the table, so to speak.
Yeah, sure. So the program has run annually since 1997. It's a joint program where Army and National Indigenous agency put together a project for a remote community each year, and it varies right across Australia where it's delivered, and being delivered in Pompera. There's a range of effects being delivered here covering construction, mm-hmm. health and vocational training.
And so with the First Nation continuance there, are they soldiers as such? Are they signed up as soldiers? Or how does that work?
So the contingent here are all soldiers from around the country, mostly out of an engineering unit there and health unit provide most of the personnel for the group here. And we're working closely with the 51st Far North Queensland Regiment here.
Yes.
They have soldiers on the ground. And, the contingent with 51 work in with members of the community here across all the activities that are being delivered.
So it's a employment-based, they're employed as such, and then they get trades from that employment, is that right?
So the focus is to improve the health and infrastructure in the community.
Okay.
And as part of that, we deliver infrastructure in various ways through the community, project management, delivering an independent living facility here, and a subdivision being done at each end of town, then a men's shed. Mm. And then after that, there is a training team that is delivering vocational training, and that's tailored for ongoing work in the community. And
And are we talking male and females, Major Greg?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So the catering team here especially have had plenty of females gaining from the training delivered there. And the construction and maintenance group have had the chance working with them down on that aspect.
Fantastic. Speaking of women, let's bring Private Melanie Norris to the table and have a yarn regarding the Army medical technician. A very good morning, Melanie. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, good, sister, good. Now, tell us about your role and what you do as an Army medical technician and how long you've been doing this role and how you find in the program.
Yeah, so I've been a medic in the Army for just coming up to 6 years now. I've been very lucky to come up here on ACAP. Mm. The health team, we've been able to do a We've worked in with the school. We've gotten to work in with the health centre here.
Yes.
And had a little bit there. We've also done a little bit of work with the women's shelter as well, which is...
Because girls can do anything, and you're showing that by being at the table and 6 years in the job. It's inspiring for our deadly sisters out there.
Yeah, we've... I got to meet her 51 Finals Queensland with that service, and we ran a little bit of training with them in first aid and tactical care for combat capacity as well.
Yes.
It was excellent to talk to them and hear their experiences.
To Delhi. And where do you stem from, Melanie?
So I'm from Brisbane.
Okay, Rodia, fantastic.
Yeah.
Too deadly. Girls can do anything, is what I always say. Yep.
Yeah.
We'll bring Lance Corporal Anthony Curtis to the table, plan operator. A very good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So tell us about your role as a plan operator and how long you've been involved with this deadly program.
Yep. So as a plan operator, just basically on this ACAT, we've done all the earthworks for both the subdivisions and also for the men's shed.
Yes.
This is my first year and in a plan operator role, and so I've been pretty lucky to be able to come up and participate in this in the program.
Good, fantastic. We have the First Nation soldiers at the table. The aspiration for a career pathway is what I'm picking up, and we're finding that our soldiers, men and women, our First Nation soldiers, are looking at this opportunity, grabbing the bulls with both horns?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good opportunity for the construction. Get to practice sort of industry skills as well as leave a legacy as well, which will be enjoyed by the community. So it's really good.
Yeah, fantastic. And look, nothing beats working on country, and that's what the mob are doing there with this fantastic ACAP program. Major Greg, back to you. In regards to the training, did they do army training as well in regarding weapons and what have you?
There's no weapons training here. The training is focused on the skills that we bring to community that will enhance their abilities here and give them employment opportunities after that.
Sure, sure. Do you find that, have you found that any of the participants want to become soldiers or look at it as a career path 5-10 years down the track?
Yeah, there have been a few people interested and asked about positions that might be available and what the career looks like. Yeah, so it's good to see that interest.
Yeah, well, I see a three-pronged spear here in regarding, like I said, nurturing these young ones, working on in their community, working on country, job ready, so to speak, but also possibility of career pathways.
Yeah, for sure. We really hope that they get a lot out of that. There's been really good take-up on the training that we've delivered. We've seen some really positive outcomes there. And as I said, some people interested in careers in defence and also with the training that we've provided actually have gone into a job from their time here already. So we've
fantastic. So it's a nice pathway. Just to confirm again, a CAP goes across the whole of Cape York and to all the other Aboriginal communities, is that right?
Yeah, ACAP goes to a selected community each year. And it ranges right across Australia.
Good.
It's spread from you. And, it's been in Far North 5 times.
Yeah, exactly. And look, it's also like a bridge builder as well. When you got non-Indigenous soldiers working with our mob, it's a nice bridge builder. It's an education bridge as well. So it's a fantastic opportunity for all involved, really.
Yeah, definitely. Educational, but also just catching up with them, relating with them daily.
Yes.
Just as we're going about town, just engaging with the community in a whole range of ways has brought people on both sides.
Yes.
A lot from the experience. Really beneficial.
I'm picking up probably also a platform for younger ones, teenagers and what have you. Seeing their elders working in the space, it could lift their heads up in regarding their future as well.
Yeah, for sure. There's been a lot of activity at the school with
good.
Our teams here, but with the health team, and the kids have just loved the interaction.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of inspiration born from that, and really good to see that influence. And the school does great work with them, and it's been really good working in with the activities they have there.
Good. Major Greg, when you get to a community like Pomperau, how long are you posted there for?
So we arrived here late May, spent a couple of weeks building our camp, and we're now at week 11, so it'll be 12 weeks on the ground here that the whole contingent has been here delivering the project. So, yeah.
So with soldiers like Lance Corporal Anthony and Private Melanie, they get time off? They get, like, is it like 2 weeks on, 1 week off, home, or do they stay put for the whole 12 weeks?
Well, we're here, and there's a job to be done. We stick at it.
Yes.
There is usually a chance to get away and take a break, but this year, just due to COVID.
Yeah, yeah, true too. The world we live in.
The mess that
Now, look, at Fan Sans Fan says ACAP is up and running. Fantastic. Been running for 24 years. ACAP 21 is the conversation here at the moment in Pomperow. Love the work that you guys are doing. Thank you very much for sharing. All the best to your Private Melanie, Lance Corporal Anthony, and also Major Greg. Thank you so very much for sharing.
Thank you.
And big shout out to the Pomperow mob and Too Deadly, your mob. And thanks. We'll talk soon. You take care, your mob.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. A deadly yarn there. Major Greg Stenard is the officer in charge for ACAP 21, and also Lance Corporal Anthony Curtis, a plan operator with the 6th Engineer Support Regiment, and also Private Melanie Norris is an Army medical technician with the 1st Close Health Battalion. And working in Pomperow, big shout out to Mob there in Pomperow, a fantastic opportunity. ACAP work across the Cape and work with all our First Nation Aboriginal communities, and it's a great, like I said, great bridge builder. It's a career pathway, job-ready opportunity, but also looking at going further and becoming an officer or becoming a soldier in the Army, in the forces. Too deadly, mob. Have your say, yarn up strong. Add to the conversation here, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.